Hey everyone, welcome to the Faith Chapel podcast. We are so glad to have you join us. Faith Chapel exists to help people follow Jesus, be transformed by Jesus, and be on mission with Jesus. No matter where you are on your spiritual journey, you're welcome here. If you have any questions about who we are or what you hear, you can visit faithchapel.cc or email podcast@faithchapel.cc. We'd love to hear from you. All right, let's dive into this week's message. Well, I sure hope you're doing well. My name's Nate. If I haven't met you, I want to welcome you. Everybody online, thanks for joining in. Hey, and especially if maybe you're just in the process of investigating, we call it being spiritually unresolved, thanks for having the courage to tune in or to show up, and we hope you find this is a safe place to think deeply about the teachings of the Bible and the person of Jesus. So we're glad you're here doing that. So last week we started a new series, a field guide to winning the war in your mind. And there's this truth, which I don't think this would be culturally normal, but the Bible is really clear that there is an ongoing battle for my mind. That there is truth, which God says about himself, about us. And then there's this whole other just pot of lies that the enemy of God, which then would be the enemy of God's people, wants to speak about us, wants us to adopt these things that are untrue. And last week, we looked at a scripture from 2 Corinthians chapter 10, where Paul says this. He says that if you're not careful, what happens with these lies is they create a stronghold or a fortress in your life. And if you believe the lie long enough, if it's I'm worthless, I can never be forgiven, or on the other side of the spectrum, I am so uniquely special, there's nothing wrong with me, I can build up a fortress in my life that then keeps me inhibited. And Paul said, here's what I want you to do. I want you, rather than thinking of your mind as being some passive thing where just thoughts come and go and I can't control what I think, he says, I want you to actually take captive every thought. Okay, the thoughts that are not from God, and I want you to make them obedient to Christ. Okay, so he invites us into a life of thinking, when there's a thought, and I understand this is potentially a stronghold in my life, this is a thought that's not true about me, or is not true about God, I pursue the thought, and I make it my captive, and here's what I say to it. Rather than me being obedient to that thought, okay, this ongoing lie, I say to that thought, once I've taken it captive, you are now obedient to Jesus Christ. So you reverse the ownership. So often our thoughts control us, and Paul says, I want you to take control of your thoughts and make them obedient to Christ. So here's what we're gonna do this week. We're gonna look at something else that is written in the first century, most likely by the Apostle Paul in Romans chapter 12, verse 1 and 2. And Paul is talking to, just think for a moment of the audience, this is Rome. Okay, this is this early church that is emerging in the capital of the world. This is when Rome is from India to England, from North Africa. I mean, it controls the known world. It is a juggernaut of power. It is wealthy. It establishes the Pax Romana, or the Peace of Rome, via the sword and the Roman legions. But 1/3 of the empire are slaves. So it's an oppressed group. And you know, like, enough about Rome. It celebrated violence. It celebrated strength. It worshiped all of the angry gods. It is a place oftentimes considered in debauchery, but brilliant in its military strategy, in its forms of government. So now you have this little group of followers of Jesus living in Rome, and they're in a hostile environment, right? They're trying to follow the teachings of Rabbi Jesus, which are utterly different than the common ways of thinking as a Roman. And this is what Paul writes to them in Romans chapter 12, verse 1 and 2. Let's read this together, and we're gonna talk about this whole idea of renewing our minds. Romans 12, 1 and 2. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy. We gotta talk about this, because Paul says the way this is possible is how you perceive God. So in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies, okay, the entirety of who you are. My flesh, in Greek, it's my sarx, my pneuma, which is my spirit, and my mind. Offer the whole of who you are as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Paul says, if there was something that you could do to prioritize God, to honor him, it's this offering the person that you are to him. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. How many people would say, hey, you know, I'd like a renewed, updated version 2.0 mind? I love that, right? He says, I want you to be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then, when your mind is renewed, you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. You'll have this perspective where you understand life from God's perspective. You understand his will. Like, there aren't as many moral quandaries. You're like, no, my mind's been renewed, so I know the ways of God now. There's been this morphing, this transformation in my mind. Let's take some time and let's walk through these scriptures. I got five things that I'd like to share in this field guide, this battlefield for our mind. So last week, we take captive, we control, we influence the thoughts we think, and how do we renew our mind? Number one, Paul says, if you want to do this, here's where it starts. You offer your bodies as a living sacrifice. Offer your bodies as a living sacrifice. So whether you were Jewish or Roman, in the ancient world, this is very foreign to us, right? We have the Humane Society. We try to save animals. But in the ancient world, there was, whatever the religion was, there was this perspective that the gods were always angry. And in order to appease the wrath of gods, what did you do? You had to offer a sacrifice. Okay, so the Romans did this and their temples to Zeus and all their temples, and the Hebrews did this. From a Hebrew perspective, it's this, is that I have failed God through my sin, and therefore the most precious thing is life. Therefore, something dies so that I can be forgiven. A sheep, a goat, a dove, something like that. In the Roman perspective, it's I fail God, God's angry, and I appease the wrath of the gods by bringing him some sort of sacrifice. And so it was a world, this is just common, this happened all over the planet, where thousands, perhaps millions of animals died on a daily basis to appease the wrath of the Roman gods, or to bring about forgiveness for the Jewish people. And here's what Paul says. Because of the person of Jesus, because Jesus was the only human being who lived his life completely submitted to the Father, who never chose independence, but chose submission to the Father, he went to the cross and he died as the ultimate and final sacrifice for the sins that human beings had or will commit. This is just one of Paul's clearest teachings, that what happened through the life, the death, and the resurrection of Jesus, please hear me, has taken care of sin once and for all. Nothing else needs to die. Nothing else needs to die in my place to make me worthy. Nothing else can appease the wrath or the justice of God. It was completely appeased through the cross. So no longer do I have to bring an animal. Paul says, I invite you to live a completely different way. And this would have been radical. I want you to offer your body, the totality of who you are, to God as a living sacrifice. And this is different, right? It's not one sacrifice is dead and then like I'll try to behave well so I don't have to do any more sacrifices. Paul says, I want you to continually offer your mind, your life, your aspirations, your goals. I want you to live in this surrendered posture where you just say, God, I am yours. I'm a living sacrifice. Now, here's the problem with being a living sacrifice. You want to crawl off the altar every now and then, don't you? I'm not sure I want to do this. Like, how about today I live for me? right? Paul says, no, I just want to invite you to this lifestyle saying, God, here's my career, here's my finances, here's my dreams, here's my failures, here's my family, here's my social friendships. I just offer them to you. They're yours to use as you want. Now, how can you do that? Because that is there a greater sacrifice that a human being can make? It goes back to Paul's introductory words. He says, therefore, my brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercies, in view of God's mercies, I want you to offer your bodies as living sacrifices. This is the only way that I can offer my body as a sacrifice to God, if I truly believe that God is merciful, that he is kind, that he is loving, that he loves me as much right now in the current state as he ever could. His love for me is total, it's complete. If my perspective of God is that he is harsh, disappointed, and angry, why in the world would I sacrifice my life to him? It all begins with this. And for many of you who might be spiritually unresolved, this is one of the fundamental questions that you're going to have to deal with. Is God truly merciful and loving? Because following Jesus means that I am surrendering my life to him. And it would be terrifying to surrender my life to a demanding, angry God. Or is he merciful and loving? And if he is, it gives me the courage to step forward and say, here I am. This is me. I trust you. I'm giving up control because I know that you're a merciful and kind God. So that's the precursor to being able to sacrifice your life to God. So offer your bodies. Number two, Paul says, and I want you to offer resistance. I want you to offer a form of resistance. He says, I don't want you to be conformed by the patterns of this world. Okay, what does he mean by the patterns of this world? Every society that has ever existed has social norms, okay? And then human beings, from some perspectives, we call them instincts. Paul would call them your old nature or your sinful state. That there are things within me that are normal. When I am hurt, what do? I get revenge. I retaliate. When I am angry, what do? I choose not to forgive. I hold a grudge. There are all these norms. He says, those are the patterns of this world. And he invites his followers to resist. So this word conformed in the Greek language means for something to be shaped through exterior pressure. So this is a lump of clay, okay? So this word would very literally mean, he says, I don't want you to be shaped by exterior pressures, the cultural norms around you. So if you lived in Rome in the first century, there are certain perspectives about human sexuality. There are certain perspectives about violence, vengeance, all these things, which were normal. Like a good Roman, you got revenge, okay? Completely different than these radical teachings of Jesus that they're now trying to adopt, where Jesus says, I want you to love your enemies. You want to know how ludicrous that sounded to a Roman? Love my enemies? You kill your enemies. That's what we celebrate here in Rome. Paul says all those things that are cultural norms. If you're not careful, here's what they do. They just put pressure on you and they conform you. And eventually, you're gonna end up like the norms, like the instincts that rage in your body. There's an exterior pressure that shapes and forms you. And he says this, I want you to offer resistance. If you want to have a different type of mind, you're going to have to say, you know what? That's normal. That might be culturally celebrated. That might satisfy my instincts. But I am going to say, no. I'm going to say, listen, I'm living according to a different set of values. So he says, offer that resistance. Do not be conformed. Here's the problem. You will be conformed. I will be conformed by cultural norms without even thinking about it. Because it's just there, right? It's just what everybody does. It's what everybody celebrates. And he says, you're gonna have to be thoughtful, you're gonna have to contemplate, and you're gonna have to say, you know what? I don't want that pressure to shape me from the outside. But Paul offers an alternative to this whole idea of change. He says, you don't want to be shaped by cultural norms, outward pressure. This is point number three. He says, I want you instead to experience transformation. So this is a different type of change. One would be exterior, be conformed. He says, I actually want you to be transformed, which it was one of my favorite words in the whole Greek language, metamorphao. We get our word metamorphosis from it. Metamorphosis. So metamorphosis is the exact opposite of this being conformed. Metamorphosis, anybody like go back to elementary science class, the first time that you were introduced to the idea of metamorphosis. You remember it's the caterpillar? And no, like, we have butterfly gardens, but I've never been to a caterpillar garden, right? Because they're kind of gross. They have like dozens and dozens of legs and they're hairy and they're squishy and they just crawl on the ground. But something happens to a caterpillar, we call it metamorphosis, that it creates a cocoon, and then there's this period of waiting. Like the caterpillar disappears, it's in a cocoon, and then one day the cocoon starts shaking, and what comes out? What comes out is a caterpillar that's gone through metamorphosis. And it has wings. And it can fly. And you might look at it and think, man, maybe in the body I can see the old caterpillar, but this is radically different. What happened to all your legs? How'd you get those wings? How'd you become so beautiful? And so this is the word that Paul uses. He says, okay, so you can't be conformed. We're gonna have to offer a form of resistance. Instead, I want you to be transformed, which is an internal changing. Rather than exterior pressure shaping me, he says, there's this dynamic work of God that can be present within the human being, where it's not all about behavior modification. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm so sorry, but this is where the church so often gets it wrong. We teach something like behavior modification, like stop doing that, start doing this. If you just do the right things enough, eventually you'll get it right. The Bible, Paul, Jesus, I always say this, no. What you need is an interior transformation. You need a new identity. You need new beliefs because our actions always come from within. It's what I believe about God, myself. That's what I'll live out. So Paul says, here's what you need. You need to experience metamorphosis. That this me that you see right now, there's the Spirit of God working at an internal level to make me new, to change my values, to make me less selfish, to make me more like Jesus. There's a Spirit, I love this, the same power that raised Jesus Christ from the dead is at work within me. There is a resurrection happening. When you're a follower of Jesus, you're in the process of resurrection. The problem is you're in your tomb. I'm in my tomb for more than 3 days. I'm decades in my tomb. And God is still resurrecting me. He's still making me new. So this is what Paul says. I want you to experience transformation at the core of who you are. It's a renewal. So there's this miraculous part that God's work within me. However, he includes our participation, okay? I want you to experience transformation. He says, how? By the renewing of your mind. The renewing of your mind. Here's this fourth step. It's the how-to part. He does not say by the renewing of your behavior, okay? We can boil following Jesus down into something that is truncated and unhealthy, and it's all about behavior modification. He says, no. I want your mind to be renewed rather than your behavior to be renewed. Because if your mind's renewed, your behavior will follow suit. We always believe this. We believe that identity precedes behavior. When I believe the truth about who God is, the truth about who I am, then my actions will always follow suit. So renewing of the mind. I was thinking about our home. 9 years ago, we moved into a home. It was built in the late 50s. And we bought it from a family that had lived there for 41 years. Okay, so that's a long time. They lived in the same house for 41 years. And my assumption is that when they like redid the last remodel in like 1964, they it was completely up to date and cool, okay? Did anybody know that life has changed, like decorative styles have changed a little bit over the last 40 years? And when Jenny, like she found the house, she said, I gotta come look at this. And I looked at it and I'm like, oh, it just looked like a headache to me. I've never seen so much shag carpet. There's a blue bathtub. There's brown sinks and toilets. You know, there's like an avocado refrigerator. I was like, oh, this is look, I can't, this is like, I know, no. And she had this phrase. She used it multiple times. It has good bones. And I'm like, yeah, but the problem is I'm looking at the flesh. And like, this just looks like the work to me. So she talked me into it, and she was right. Has great potential. We love our house. But for 9 years, you know what I've been doing? Renewing my home. You know how good it felt last year when I only have one more bathroom left, but I took brown toilets and brown sinks and bathtubs and I threw them in the dumpster. And I'm like, get out, be behind me. Like, be die. Like, and you, I'm not keeping around because I don't think that's ever coming back, right? Some things come around, not yellow toilets, okay? That's over. It's taken a process, okay? There's a process involved in renewing your mind. What does the renewal of the mind look like? Well, as I was just thinking through this, these parallels between some of modern science, especially neuroscience, and what Paul is writing about 2,000 years ago just started to strike me. So I wrote to one of my best friends in the world, Dr. French. He's a neurologist here in town. And I sent him a couple videos. I said, hey, you're the neurologist. You got to tell me what you think of these. And he wrote back and he said, you know, they're oversimplifications because the brain is extraordinarily complicated, right? But he goes, there's truth to what they're saying. So just a second, we're going to watch a video. I just want you to think before we watch this video that 2,000 years ago, when they thought that if you're sick, you know, the best thing we can do is cut you open and bleed you or attach leeches to your body. Or burn you. Did you know that was another treatment for things? We had no understanding whatsoever about the human body. But Paul divinely understood that the mind can actually be renewed. Right? Paul writes this 2,000 years ago. Look at this modern video regarding neuroscience and neuroplasticity.
Not so long ago, many scientists believed that the brain did not change after childhood, that it was hardwired and fixed by the time we became adults. But recent advances in only the last decade now tell us that this is simply not true. The brain can and does change throughout our lives. It is adaptable, like plastic. Hence, neuroscientists call this neuroplasticity. How does neuroplasticity work? If you think of your brain as a dynamic, connected power grid, there are billions of pathways or roads lighting up every time you think, feel, or do something. Some of these roads are well travelled. These are our habits, our established ways of thinking, feeling, and doing. Every time we think in a certain way, practice a particular task, or feel a specific emotion, we strengthen this road. It becomes easier for our brains to travel this pathway. Say we think about something differently, learn a new task, or choose a different emotion. We start carving out a new road. If we keep traveling that road, our brains begin to use this pathway more, and this new way of thinking, feeling, or doing becomes second nature. The old pathway gets used less and less and weakens. This process of rewiring your brain by forming new connections and weakening old ones is neuroplasticity in action. The good news is that we all have the ability to learn and change by rewiring our brains. If you have ever changed a bad habit or thought about something differently, you have carved a new pathway in your brain and experienced neuroplasticity firsthand. With repeated and directed attention towards your desired change, you can rewire your brain.
So Paul says 2,000 years ago to the people in the city of Rome, I don't want you to be conformed any longer by the patterns of this world, but instead, I want you to be transformed, a metamorphosis to take place in your life from the inside out by the renewing of your mind. Paul is inviting us, this divine partnership between God and our responsibility to make our minds new. I want to just look briefly at something Paul writes in the book of Philippians chapter 4. We'll look at this more in the coming weeks. Paul says this. He says, finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue, if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. Meditate. So this word sometimes scares people because it is used in different types of Eastern mysticism. But this is a word that you will find throughout the ancient scriptures, the Bible. In Hebrew, it literally means to ruminate, which means to chew on something over and over and over and over and over again until it's broken down and can be absorbed, okay? And Paul says, I want you to meditate. Some of our Bibles, English Bibles, will translate fix your mind on these things. Is Paul saying this to his friends in Rome? I want you to begin to think about, rather than the lie that you're insufficient, that your sin is so profound, you could never be forgiven. The lie that you'll never be loved. He says, I want you to take time and fixate and meditate your mind on things that are true and lovely and beautiful, of good rapport, things that are praiseworthy. I want you to fix your mind on the things that are actually true about God and are actually true about you. And you know what? If you do that long enough, pretty soon I've developed a new neural pathway and my mind is experiencing some sort of renewal. That's the beauty of what Paul says. Don't let that old path, that thing that you heard when you were a child, don't let that be the only pathway in your brain. Let God metamorphosize you. Fix your mind on the right things so that you can focus on what is actually true. But here's point number five. Ready? Here's how we do this. I'm going to give you some examples. This is what you have to do. If you want to renew your mind, if you want to fix your minds on what is true, write it. Here's what I would say. If you understand there's a stronghold, there's a lie that I believe, you find something here. I don't want you to write like, I am a really special person. My mama loves me. I was potty trained early. I should be celebrated. That is a bunch of gooey, right? That is not what your mind needs, okay? You write down something that is true that God says. And you make it your own. You go, this is what God says about me. And then you say it. And I'm not saying you say it once. These are the type of things that you say over and over. When the same temptation comes back, when the same addiction is dealt with, I wrote something down that's true about God and true about me, and I'm gonna say it. I'm gonna say it in the face of the devil who wants to lie to me. Then I'm gonna think it. It's in my mind. This is a new way of thinking, and I'm gonna confess it. Even when I don't see it coming to fruit yet in my life, I'm gonna say, I am a new renewed creation. I feel like an old creation, but I believe that what God said about me is true, and I'm gonna confess this. And you know what ends up happening? You believe it. You believe it. So I like to just give you a few examples. These are the examples of exactly this. You write it, you say it, you think it, you confess it, you believe it. These are examples. Many of these I've just developed even in my own life to deal with my own insecurities and my own failings and shortcomings. When you're feeling confused, it's something you write, say, confess, believe. My life belongs to God. I will trust in the Lord with all my heart, and I will not lean on my own understanding. In all my ways, I will acknowledge him, and here's the promise. He will direct my path, Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. Those moments where you're like, I don't know what to do. I'm so confused. You take a statement like this, and you say, no, I know what to do. My life belongs to God, and I will trust in the Lord with all my heart. I choose not to lean on my own understanding. In all my ways, I'm pointing to him. I'm not pointing to me, and here's what he's going to do. He's going to make my pathway straight. He's going to show me the way to go. When I'm feeling overwhelmed, weak, vulnerable, whatever it might be, because Jesus gives me strength, I can face anything, do anything, and get through anything. He is stronger, bigger, and more powerful than any setback that I might face. Philippians 4:13. I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. When I'm feeling lust or temptation, I am not a slave to these thoughts. I am not alone in this. God is faithful. Even when I'm tempted, he will always give me a way out. 1 Corinthians 10:13. You speak that at the moment that you're feeling the temptation, feeling worried. God cares for me. I will not, this is confession, I will not be anxious. I cast all my cares upon him. The peace of God dwells in me and rules my mind. Could you be worried when you say this? Yeah, you're probably saying it because you're worried. But you're establishing a new truth. You're confessing it, 1 Peter 5:7. When I'm feeling condemned or like a failure, I am in Christ. This is a statement to say, I'm forgiven. I've moved from one kingdom to another. I am in Christ Jesus. Therefore, I am a new creation. The old me is gone. The new me is alive and thriving. Jesus has taken my sin and separated it from me as far as the east is from the west. 2 Corinthians 5:17 and Psalm 103:12. When I am experiencing depression, I have hope. God has good plans for me. He is for me. His plans for me are for hope and a bright, beautiful future. Jeremiah 29:11. When I'm feeling alone, I am not alone. God is with me. He will never leave me alone. I do not need to be afraid because God is with me. Joshua 1:9. When I'm feeling unloved, there is nothing, absolutely nothing that can separate me from the love of God. Nothing from the past, nothing in the future, nothing that hell can bring against me can separate me from his love. He will never give up on me. Romans 8:39. Feeling overwhelmed. Listen, no weapon, no attack formed against me will prosper. It will not succeed. Whatever the enemy does to me or says about me does not matter because I stand firm in Jesus. Isaiah 24:7. If you have felt the same things burdening you, overwhelming you, and I guarantee you, you have, Paul invites his friends in Rome. He says, what if we could have a new mind? What if we could fix our minds on the right things? What if there could be a restoration that would take place? There's a miracle of metamorphosis that God will do in your life. And there is a responsibility that I have to say, my mind is not an empty vessel. My mind does not determine my identity or my thinking. I refuse. I identify the lies. And I focus upon the truth. I want to ask just a few questions in closing. Number one, in what areas am I being conformed by the cultural norms, right? I guarantee you there are things, we just don't notice them. We don't recognize them because it's normal. But I think part of this is you begin to say, okay, is that really who I want to be? Is that really what I want to celebrate? Is that really what I want to value? And it takes like this outside objective perspective because you're in the midst of it. What are the forms? What are the things that are shaping and pressing me? And I'm being changed, but from the outside in. Question number two, do I believe in a merciful God that I can surrender myself to? So even those of us who would say, yeah, I'm a follower of Jesus, I just gotta say, too often I think we have perspectives of God that he is angry and disappointed and we're trying to like do more and try harder and maybe I can really make God happy this time. If you are not yet spiritually resolved, this is your big question. Do you believe that God is merciful? Because you'll never be able to surrender the entirety of who you are unless you believe that he is merciful. Where does my mind need renewal? I want a new mind. Where do I need the metamorphosis of God to be taking place? Transformation. Last one, what do I need to write, say, think, and confess so that I eventually believe it? I don't give a lot of homework assignments, okay? But I would challenge you, wherever you're watching, I would challenge you, find something. You just know, like, hey, I'm going down this road and this has been my path. And if I don't do something, I'm gonna stay on this same pathway of thinking. Figure something out, write something down, find a truth, what God says, and just begin to write it, say it, think it, confess it, believe it, over and over. This is like, you know how I've done this? Like, I've got sticky notes, I've got note cards, I put them, like, I tape one onto the steering wheel of my car. This is what I'm talking about, is you just, like, no, I get up in the morning, like, if your thing is negativity, my job is terrible, the weather is terrible, traffic is terrible, blah, blah, blah. Find something that talks about how the joy of the Lord is your strength. Or that there is hope, and you, man, get. I have a friend who puts something new on their mirror every morning because the first thing they do is look in the mirror, and rather than like, it's gonna be a terrible day, they put like some inspirational scripture, and the first thing like, oh yeah, I'm renewing my mind. It's going to be different. We hope that this helps you take your next step on your spiritual journey. If you'd like to get involved with the work and ministry of Faith Chapel, visit faithchapel.cc and click on Next Steps. If you'd like to speak to a pastor or connect with us in any way, email connect@faithchapel.cc. We look forward to connecting with you soon.